a few minutes, I believe that the title of my presentation, as opposed to my esteemed colleagues, was Practical, Pragmatic Issues of Dating. So why don't we just mention a few different ha'aros, different thoughts. If anybody has any questions or any, again, want to discuss it either this evening or in future days, certainly please, by all means, do so. But before discussing some pragmatic issues of dating, maybe just even speak in a very general sense about the very idea of marriage in the first place. Okay, we know the Gemara tells us, maybe even from the Torah, that marriage itself, the relation between a man and a woman, is something that brings a person towards a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's the very thing in life that creates real growth in life. The person thinks about everything they do in their life. I went to Nicaragua for a CJF trip. I was in Hask for the last 8 summers. I did this. I traveled to South America to bring a poor person a pair of shoes. A person can do all sorts of amazing things in life. And none of that compares to really the relationship towards the challenges and the growth that takes place really on a daily basis in marriage. Right? Really the daily basis of growth that takes place in the course of dating, engagement, marriage, raising children. And the Gemara tells us the person wants to find God in the world, so they find the space between ish v'ishto, ish v'isha. That's not just the Gemara speaking, but real growth takes place in the course of relationships. Now, if that's the case, I really want to impress upon you the following two things. You know, when a person is about to engage in dating, when a person dates, and I'm in the base medrash, I often hear people speak about things of, oh, what a disaster, right? It's the worst. A guy told me that day, Ba'oza Halashan. Oh, God, it's the worst. Dating is the worst, right? And it's a nightmare, or it's too much, or it's so... Right? And that's the whole attitude towards the idea of finding a person, falling in love, right? Giving to a person, developing a great relationship, a certain negativity, a certain cynicism, a certain sarcasm, a certain, again, negativity. There's no place for it. Right? The attitude should be, this is a great chus. It's a great opportunity to connect to somebody, to share my life with someone, to have a person really know me, to really get to know a person, to give to somebody. You know, that should be conveyed in an attitude of positivity and being upbeat and being optimistic. That's issue number one. Welcome, guys. So the issue number two is that, you know, my daughter just ran yesterday. Anybody else do this in the Chai Lifeline Marathon? I'm sure other people have ran before. And I saw her, she's 16 years old, waking up at the break of dawn, which is not easy for a teenager. Dr. Pelkovitz had four children run?
Three girls and a boy.
Waking up at the break of dawn, Motzei Shabbos, all hours of the day, while in high school, just for a race, just for a marathon. I see people here in YU who will intern every single summer to make sure they have a job afterwards. There are guys here who are pre-med, I don't have to tell you, Ellie and others, what people have to do as far as summers and high school and working in a lab, and right, all for the purpose of getting into medical school. And a person wants to engage in the single most significant act of their life, to date and to meet a person and to get married and to be a good husband and be a good father. And you ask them, like, what have you done to prepare for this stage of life, and they'll look at you like they have absolutely no clue what you're speaking about. They asked Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I probably can tell you if a different person, one of his sons asked him, right before he became a father, he said, Tati or Abba, I'm becoming a father now, do you have any advice for me as I become a father? And Rabbi Yaakov responded back, he said, you're asking me now, a week before you become a father, any advice on how to become a father? You want to be a good father, so you work on yourself for the last 20 years of your life, 25 years of your life. And a person wants to get married and have a relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being brought into a person's life between ish v'isha, but they have to prepare themselves for it. The person's a Baal Gaiva. The person's a Baal Kas. The person's into themselves. The person is selfish. The person is too sharp. The person doesn't know how to give. And then they want to have a good marriage. When they start dating, it's impossible. Right? Whether or not a person is dating, whether a person is dating now, or a year from now, 2 years from now, you want to prepare for that. That means daily working on yourself, the midos of what it means to be a good husband. And you want to do that, I would speak to, besides looking, hopefully, your own parents' relationship, speak to your parents. I know that sounds like a crazy idea. You know, you tell a guy to sort of, like, what do your parents think? They're like, my parents. Like, why would I speak to my parents about this, right? Like, to speak to parents. Speak to myself, other rebellion. Like, what does it take to be a good husband? Like, what are the needos that I may not even be thinking about, that I need to be thinking about? What are the issues that I need to work on? Baruch Hashem, I know almost all of you very well. And what are the issues I need to work on to really go ahead and become a husband down the road? That is a process that doesn't take a day or weeks, but literally months and years of preparing whenever it is you decide to go ahead and to get married. There's much that I could speak about. There are hundreds of books, thousands of hours of lectures about specific issues of dating. I just want to maybe mention a few of the issues that guys often speak to me about. And again, obviously there's a lot more than just these things. But guys don't often ask, like, when's an appropriate time to start dating, right? I'm 21, I'm 22, I have another semester left, I'm working next year, should I start dating now? So what are the cheshbonos involved in when a person should start dating? Now, there's really two different parts to that question. Now, the first part is that there are probably many people that should definitely not be dating yet for various reasons. Again, part of related to what I said before, a guy who does not have a resolution about difficult issues in their childhood, a person who's very immature, a person where it's all about them. You ever know anybody in your life where you have conversations with them and every conversation is about them and about me? Right? I mean, those are issues that if you look at, that's sort of a red flag of someone that should not be dating. Very belated, very specific major issues in life that would raise a flag of maybe I'm not ready to go ahead and make the biggest commitment of my life. Now, assuming you're not that person, there aren't any major red flags in your life, and you're 21 and you're 22, you're thinking, should I start dating now? It's a very difficult cheshbon in many ways. There is a certain balance. As much as guys think about, oh, have you ever heard this before in your lives? I'm only going to be in YU. Thank God, only 6 more months of YU, and then I'm off, right? The question is, like, off to what? I mean, no offense. If a person thinks about their days in YU, most of you are learning in the morning, 100 friends, the gym, rebellion, again, a chevron, right? These are years that go by in a second. A person never gets them back. A person will look back in a few years and say, why was I rushing to leave, you know, 8 hours of learning or 5 hours of learning and the friends and a jacuzzi, which is no small thing, and the calf, which is no small thing also when someone's paying for your calf party. Right? And these are amazing years of friendship, of personal growth, of self-awareness. And for a guy to say, I'm going to quickly move on from that, and basically if I start dating now, I could be married in 7-8 months and be a father in 1.5 years, and then essentially sort of remove myself from this really amazing stage of life. You know, that certainly is not something that I would do quickly and without thought. On the other hand, a person gets to the point where they say, you know what, you know, I'm lonely. You know, I'm ready to give. I'm ready to be part of a relationship. I'm ready to give to another person. I want to connect. Not because of my friends, not because I went to a wedding and I'm in the mood because 8 of my friends are engaged last night, but because I really feel like I'm ready for that stage. So that's a real question. How do you know when you should be sort of more into your own life? How do you know when you should sort of be ready to move on with somebody else? That's certainly not an easy question. What I usually tell guys is that you really have to know how you feel. You know, if every single day it's on your mind, and you're thinking about it, and it's hard to concentrate, and you're fundamentally not happy, and you really feel like, I really want to move on in life. So that's usually a good sign that a person is certainly ready to move on. Now, I want to say, this does not apply to most of you. It does apply to some of you and other guys as well. You sometimes have guys that are 24, 25, 26, 27, and they keep on sort of finding excuses. Well, this is not a good time, and I'm not really ready now. Maybe that's already a little bit, if you fall in that category, that's already something of a little bit of an issue of concern, someone that sort of just feels they're not ready even at 24, 25, 26. That's only something that's worth discussing. I want to discuss maybe a few just nekudos of things that a person, if they are ready to date, and, you know, things to look for in a potential spouse. What time do I have? Just go. Okay. get comfortable. We're gonna okay. So just really maybe six or seven different issues that again are constant almost in every relationship. You know, things that guys think about. You know, the first issue is maybe in a general sense. Are you looking for somebody that is very identical to you? Someone that's different than you? Do you want a sort of a person that really matches your skills? Different than your skills? Right, how are you mishire? And I'm sure all of you are dating, you hear different things. No, you want to find someone who's different. No, you want to find someone who's exactly the same. And I think for me, and maybe, again, my colleagues can agree, you know, I really feel that it depends on what the issue is. If a person gets married, and they marry someone whose life vision is very different than themselves, you're very idealistic, and you marry someone who's really not very idealistic. You're passionate about making a difference in the world, and that person really is not so much. You're a person that's a deep person, and depth defines you, and the girl you're dating, or vice versa, is not that way. Fundamental issues of how you would define yourself. Now, for some of you, how do you define yourself is the easiest thing in the world, right? You know yourself, you thought about yourself, you have a good sense of who you are, and to really know how you would define yourself is very easy, and therefore it's easy to sort of find a person who shares that. Many of you, again, not necessarily in this room, right, you're lost. You don't necessarily know who am I, what defines me, what's my inner life like, and that's something that often sort of comes through the dating process. When it comes to key issues, again, who you are, life passion, life vision, if you don't find someone that shares those things, usually that translates into a somewhat unhappy life, because those things are really important to you. The other person doesn't share. And don't assume that that's going to be something that changes with life. A person who's not idealistic and passionate at 21 probably will not be at 31. A person who's not a deep-thinking person at 20 is probably not going to be at 30. When it comes to the fundamental issues in life, you want to really match up with that person. Now, when it comes to pragmatic issues of life, functioning issues of life, if you can find someone that's different than you, that's absolutely great. I want to say I've been married for 17 years. Efrat, or as well as Tosi, knows my wife. She's a gem of a person. And quite honestly, there are many ways in life I'll be helpless if I didn't marry my wife. She's very competent. She's on top of things. She's exceedingly smart. I don't necessarily have those skills. She knows how to budget. She knows how to, right? There's like all sorts of sort of life pragmatic issues where I might be less pragmatic, less practical. She's more pragmatic. That's absolutely great. One person is more outgoing. Another person is less outgoing. That could be great. One person is maybe more nervous. The other person is more calm. Those are great issues, but those are functional life issues. It's not necessarily fundamental life vision issues. And to me, that's, again, the balance you want to find. Life vision, internal real issues to connect on, pragmatic functional issues. You can find someone that's mashlim yourself. One person has a little bit more of a temper. Another person is more calm. Those are all things that allow for a very, very healthy, functioning home. Sometimes a person is dating, and they're not sure whether certain issues or certain things in the girl they're dating are real issues, what I guess you would call red flag issues. How do I know whether this is a big issue, whether it's not a big issue? How do I know whether I should be concerned, whether I should not be concerned? And again, those are very complicated questions. But for myself and my experience, both personally and dealing with students, I found two issues to be red flag issues, meaning things that should not be brushed under the rug. Things that you shouldn't say, well, it's nothing, it'll just pass with time. These are things that over the course of life, at least in my estimation, again, people can disagree, certainly become issues in life. You know, the first is a person that lacks self-awareness. Right? You're dating a girl, she doesn't really seem to know herself. She doesn't really seem to understand herself. If you have a serious conversation and you bring up a criticism, she's very defensive. She doesn't want to hear it. Now, perhaps maybe you're criticizing too much, which definitely could be an issue with guys. But someone who lacks a basic understanding of themselves, and they're very defensive, and they're honestly looking to grow in the relationship, you know, to me, that's a red flag. And maybe it's a red flag. I don't know if you agree or disagree. It might be a red flag that could be explained or dealt with, or a person can go to counseling. But a person that's not willing to really look at themselves, accept criticism, they become defensive, they're not self-aware, that's something that really becomes a very major issue when you try to build a relationship of two people growing with a certain push and pull in the relationship. That's red flag number one. Red flag number two, and again, these are things that, again, could be dealt with time, but certainly it's not a minor issue. It is a young woman that gets very, very easily overwhelmed by life. If a person walks into any firm house of four children or five children or two children, just to keep life together, everyone is working, everyone is trying to, it sounds ridiculous, but it's like a Herculean achievement to go live day in, day out of food in the fridge, right? The house is clean. Your children actually have lunches at school where you're not the kid who's constantly forgetting. I don't know if you were those kids or not. Can you please bring your son has forgotten his lunch for the 80-something time this year to make sure that there's money, the money stresses of life. Life is very difficult. If you're going to marry someone who even taking one test in school, she becomes totally unraveled, totally overwhelmed. She can't handle things. She breaks down. She needs you calling every hour of the day to be there for her. Those are issues. So the lack of ability to handle life, even at age 20, 21, is something, again, that perhaps could be worked on, could improve with time, could be addressed. But certainly, again, just having been through life, certainly is a red flag. Those are two things. Again, the lack of self-awareness, as well as the issue about being easily overwhelmed. I want to skip a couple things because again, Yitzhak, I have all night, but I want to be sensitive to both you not falling asleep as well to my colleagues as well. There's a constant refrain, a constant question of guys, especially who are base medrash guys, and they ask the question of how do I know, like, what the deal is with the girl that I'm dating? It's usually not phrased in a way that's more elegant in the way that I'm expressing it. What's the deal with girls as far as growing and learning? If you're a guy, as many of you are, in fact, most of you are, right, not all of you, I'll tell you which ones are, you know, you're in the base medrash in the morning, often you're in the base medrash in the evening, you're davening three times a day, there's a certain spiritual energy of the base medrash. There are almost sort of calculable ways in which you can tell whether or not a guy is a person, for lack of a better word, is a bar aliyah, is a growth-oriented. Now, you're dating a girl, especially if you don't have sisters at home, and you don't really know. And there's like, she's not necessarily running off to shirim every hour of the day. She's not davening three times a day. She probably shops more than I shop. I've never spoken about clothing like a second in my life. But yet, you know, she shops with her friends, and they're speaking about, like, you know, how do you tell whether or not, you know, a person is growth oriented? What's sort of the mechanism of figuring out in the way that you can tell by a guy if a guy's learning X, Y, and Z? And there's certain sort of measurables of evaluating how a guy's doing. Again, sometimes that's false and fake, it doesn't mean anything, but again, it's some way of being mishaer, some way of evaluating a guy's growth, but with girls, you don't always have that. Now, of course, you do have many girls that are constantly learning and davening in a way that's very obvious, and many who are not. You know, not every girl is davening three times a day, or running off to 8,000 shiurim, or the president of TAC, or all the various things that girls might do. You know better than I do what goes on in the world. But again, that often takes time. It often takes time to evaluate a person, to get a sense, are they growth-oriented? Are they a basalia? Are they people that are striving for growth? That's not something that a person can necessarily tell after 5 minutes on a date, or a half an hour, or 2 days, or 3 days. Sometimes a relationship takes time to develop, and to grow, and to evaluate, and to assess a person. And again, I would just preach a little bit of patience, instead of after 20 minutes sort of making already a complete cheshbon about this girl's life and who she is, and she's not for me, I'm telling you she's not for me. It takes a little time sometimes to get a sense about a person. And that's true in general, right? Sometimes the behavior, I don't want to use the word piggish or disgusting, but sometimes a guy will see a picture of someone, oh, she's not my look, she's not for me. You go out for 2 hours, and right away, the hammer comes out, the red pen comes out, she's not for me. Now, the truth is, sometimes you go out on a date, I've been there before, we've all been there before, and you know after about 20 seconds, 30 seconds, it's just not going to work, and nothing. But the truth is, often in relationships, there are many, many marriages that are built on really poor first dates, poor first impressions, not an immediate attraction. And to be a person who's a real thinking person and a growing person means sometimes allowing a little bit for a relationship, for an attraction to develop. That doesn't mean a month or 2 months or 3 months, but allowing again for sometimes things to develop. I just want to pick up on three more quick issues as far as what to look for. It's often a question as far as how significant is a person's family. You want to date and you find out that the parents are divorced, you find out that the person's father had an affair, you find out this, the family's not like yours, your family is the Brady Bunch, and her family, there's all sorts of screaming that's going on in the house. How would you evaluate a person's family? The truth is, the things that myself, but especially you, who's younger, are shaped by, has been your community, your family, your school, but especially your family. And to say that family means nothing, and the family person comes from, means nothing is inappropriate. And I don't believe in sort of, I guess, more in the yeshivish world, where everything is about the family, and the checks about the family. But to say that a family is not significant certainly would be inappropriate. But again, I would be cautious. There are really two ways that families can be significant. There are people, and many of you, it's true, in this room, come from amazing families. And that means a tremendous amount. You find out that a girl comes from a family, and she's close to her mother, and her mother is the balas chesed of the community, and the parents are, that means a tremendous amount. Because no matter what she learned in SKA, or Bruria, or Michala, really what comes down to is her family, her comfort level with her family, her mother, the paradigm of that house. And you have many people that that's not what their family was. Their family perhaps was a train wreck. But if you have a person that to some degree acknowledges that, and they've grown from that, and they have a very clear sense of what they want, and what they want is different than what their family had, then that's in no way whatsoever should be a begat. If anything, just the opposite. Sometimes the girl who's come from a family of quasi-dysfunction has a much clearer sense of how to build a great home and what she wants moving forward, but that has to be the case. Right? If a girl doesn't realize and doesn't sort of want something different than perhaps what her family was, and you meet her father is like an abusive jerk, and the girl thinks, my father is the greatest guy, so those are issues. But a girl who comes from a family, but she really has sort of grown and taken those experiences and allowed it to transform herself, that can be something that's very, very positive. Two last issues as far as what to look for. I often find it, in a way, touching. The amount of guys who come to me before in my 8-9 years working here as HaMashgiach, now Mashgiach, guys who would say that, I feel bad, but I'm not really so attracted to her. I try, we've gone out for a month, I'm not attracted to her. Is there something wrong with me? Does it mean that I'm not a kadosh person? Am I superficial? Am I being just too, superficial by caring about these things? I'm like, are you crazy? Right? That would be my response. I try to do something more gently than that. I said, you're not dating a sheet of paper or a prototype. A marriage is built on attraction and commonality, enjoying being together. And for you to sort of feel bad about not being attracted to a person, right, that's outrageous. The relationship is built upon many things, including physical attraction and sexual attraction. That should not be anything that a person shies away from. On the other hand, there are people, like I haven't seen this in YU, where they're looking for an exact look, right? She has to be 5'6½" and the hair has to be this, and they dated 30 people and no one's attractive enough. I would say that person, go to Dr. Palkovitz's office, right? You can set up a meeting with him, he'll see you for about 3 or 4 months. In other words, like, attraction's nothing wrong with, but to be the person that needs the exact, I have a very close friend, he dated well over 100 people, and much of it was based on this issue. And trust me, not anybody in this room, myself included, none of us are models, none of us are the best-looking people, and then we want to find the girl that is, right, in other words, attraction is important, but again, it shouldn't necessarily be that I need to find the exact person. Again, often, if you're attracted to a person personally, and in the relationship, attraction is something that often grows with time. Lastly, as far as things to look for, it's a very common issue of guys in YU, that sometimes they find that there are hashkafic differences between where they're holding and where a girl's holding. Sometimes the girl is, quote-unquote, more yeshivish and the guy is less so. Sometimes the guy is more yeshivish and the girl perhaps has certain more modern tendencies. But just how much is that an issue in life? Now, the truth is, if the issue was where your vision in life is, I want to move to Ramat Eshkol. I want to move to the most Haredi section of Ramat Beit Shemesh, and the girl that I'm dating wants to move to fill in the blank. And the girl maybe wants to move to Teaneck. And I want to move to Ramat Eshkol, but we like each other. Is that a problem? The answer is it's absolutely a problem. It means your whole life vision for yourselves obviously are going to be very different. But if you tell me that I'm maybe a little more yeshivish And she's like a little, you know, so she can see herself living in Bergenfield, and I can see myself living in Passaic. So we're a little bit different, but it's not, it's more nuances. But essentially, no, but this is, these are common issues. But essentially, we have the same life vision, the type of home we'd want to have, the basic chinuch for our children, which, again, you're not necessarily going to know that now, but a certain general sense. Again, those are sort of things that work within a certain parameter of success, and certainly relationships can be successful under those circumstances. And one last thing is, again, as I sort of mentioned before, a person goes out, and this is something that perhaps you have very little perspective on at your stage of life. It's very important to really understand what are key issues in life, what are secondary issues in life, and what are issues that are almost insignificant, right? What are the key issues in life to really form a great relationship? What are those things that might be important or nice, but may not necessarily be deal breakers? What are those things that perhaps I'm bothered by now, but really mean very little as life goes through the next 10, 20, 50, 70 years of your life? Not everything is sort of equaled on the same level. And I would again speak to people myself, Dr. Pelkovitz, from Solovsky, other people that have experience that can evaluate, is this a real issue? Is it insignificant? How do I sort of evaluate the issues that have come up? And really lastly, persons are going out for 3 months, or 4 months, or 5 months, and they're thinking to themselves, am I ready to get engaged, or should I get engaged? Is now the time? Is it not the time? It's a very big mistake that that personally is something that I was subject to when I was in NYU. I had my roommate in NYU, an amazing person by the name of Brian Galbit. We were chavrusas for 2 years in Rishalayim and 3 years roommates in NYU. We were as close as two people could be. He was going out with this amazing girl from Teaneck, and they had this type of relationship. This was in 1994 and 95. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was dating, not successfully, but yeah, different relationships were going or not going, and he met the girl that's now been his wife for the last almost 18 years. And they were so madly in love with each other that they would be on the phone at night. We were on the third floor in Reuben, and I'd wake up in the morning at 7:30 in the morning, 11 in the morning, and he was still on the phone, fast asleep, right? And she was in stirring her. I said, Brian, what in the world? I said, what are you doing? He said, Josh, I'll tell you. He said, she fell asleep before me. And if I were to wake up, she was going to wake up in the middle of the night, and there'd be a dead telephone line, and I wouldn't be there. She'd feel like I'm betraying her, and she'd feel like, do I not care about her? Do I not love her? So I stay on the phone all night, just so she wouldn't wake up. And until finally, Brian's father calls up and said, Brian, we got a $5,000 phone bill. I'm like, Brian, are you crazy? Like, this is like before, if you can imagine dating, by the way, this is before we dated, all of us here, before cell phones, before this. Everyone used to wait for the one pay phone outside the YU-based Medrash, and you'd wait there and just stuck in that little phone booth. Anyway, so this was before phone plans. And I thought to myself, that's the way that dating has to be. You fall madly in love. And when you're ready to get engaged, it's not even a decision. But I know for sure this is the person. I'm on cloud nine. And maybe one out of every, what number would you give? 10 people, 20 people, 30 people experience that unbelievable clarity, that unbelievable overflow of emotion where I have no space as the person that I want to marry. The average person, when they're ready to get engaged, to me, a cheshbon that's certainly something which is totally viable and totally reasonable is, do I care about this person? Check. Do I enjoy being around this person? Am I attracted to this person? Does this person share the same values? Is this a person, which by the way I didn't mention before, but is critical, who has a generous heart and will be a good mother and good wife and loving? Check. Right? Great. Perfect. If you have that, and you're willing to work on yourself and spend 50, 60, 70 years working on yourself, you will have an amazing marriage afterwards. It doesn't have to be that I'm like struck by like a bolt of lightning and ready to get engaged. Sometimes it is. Is this a person that I care about? Can I see myself living with this person? Will they be a good wife and mother? Do I enjoy being around them? Yes? Good. So that is definitely the criteria that will allow for a great marriage. And don't feel that you're doing something wrong by not being completely overwhelmed, you know, with emotion and love and passion. If that's there, that's great. But it's not going to make an either happier or less happy marriage a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road. I want to thank all of you. I always take the opportunity. You guys are an amazing group, both the, I guess, 100 guys here and hundreds who are not. If personally I could ever be of help in this area or other areas, by all means, please don't hesitate to ask. Thank you, everyone.
Basically, covered every single thing I was going to cover, which is good.
Go home, everybody.
Huh? Yeah, go home, that's right.
That's why they paid me the big bucks.
That's right. I'm going to bounce off 3 points. Actually, I'll start with the romantic part. It's interesting, because the research is fascinating on the romance. In general, when you look longitudinally at people who've been going out, and let's say you follow them 30, 40, 50 years later to see how their marriage is going, it turns out that these head-over-heel, romantically in love couples that can't be separate from each other at all, where the romance is almost sickeningly sweet, that actually is not a good sign. It doesn't mean that you should run away from it. It's nice, but it's somewhat of a negative indicator. Because the reality is that level of passion and romance is just not predictive one way or another. I'm not saying it's a bad sign, but it really means nothing long term. The passion part of a relationship is predictive maybe of the early months or at most the first couple of years of a marriage. But over the long run, it's really about the first point I want to talk about, which is the connection component. You want to marry somebody who could be your best friend. You want to marry somebody who you're going to be able to connect to and just enjoy being with. It doesn't mean you have to be identical. It doesn't mean that you have to be exactly clones of one another. But it means that you have to look forward to being with each other. Now, in the early dates, you may not have that. It may take time to develop that. But you want somebody who's easy to talk to. You want somebody who's good at listening to you and who you have some level of interest in what she has to say. Study after study shows that what really long-term nourishes a relationship is the ability to be there for each other. To be there for each other in terms of what Rav Glass was saying, in times of stress, as Ramchal says, the purpose of life in part is lama b'nisyonos. Life is about stress. There's inevitable financial stress, inevitable stress in terms of raising children. Life is actually wonderful also. But if you don't have somebody who could stand by your side and be able to together kind of hang out in a way that you know that you could be there for each other, that she's not going to be critical of you, that she's going to really make you feel comfortable and is going to be a source of support to you when you're going through tough times, then it's not the right person for you. So take home message number one on the romance is I more than agree with you. I actually think sometimes if that's the main point it is, and it's mostly about the physical attraction, and mostly about this kind of mushy need to merge together, you have to take a step back and say, hey, wait a second, how are we in terms of the long-term things? You know, okay, so that's number one. On the connection thing, you know, we're talking about resilience. Resilience is the core predictor, again, of a good marriage. But the research shows that if you only had one question to ask somebody to see whether or not these people are going to do well with the inevitable stresses of life, you know what that question is? It's, can you wake her up at 3 o'clock in the morning, after you're married, by the way, if you could wake her up at 3 o'clock in the morning and talk to her about some problem that you have, and that she's going to be there to listen to you. And that's what you really want. You want somebody who's going to be at your side, who is going to be selfless enough that even if you deprive her of sleep and there's something that's really bothering you, she'll be there for you. Now, that doesn't mean that she's not going to be a little annoyed, but it means that you want somebody who is really in your corner, and it's usually a wife. If you have just one person like that, you can get through almost anything. And that's what study after study shows in terms of resilience in general and marriage specifically. So ingredient number one is somebody who you can connect to, somebody who could be your best friend. I've been quoting a wonderful book that came out last year, one of the leading gerontologists in the world, who interviewed over 1,000 people, and among the main questions he asked them is, what led to success in your marriage, those who have successful marriages? And it turned out the number one most important ingredient in a successful relationship is people who said that they ultimately married somebody who they just enjoyed being with and brought out the best in them. If you're going out with somebody and she makes you feel criticized, or she makes you feel somehow that you're not good enough, and you find yourself almost like faking it when you're with her because you like her so much, either because of the physical attraction or because somehow she seems like you're marrying up when you're with her, and you're not really yourself, and she's not bringing out the best in you because of that, be very careful and really talk it out with your parents, with your Rebbe, with somebody, with a close friend, to figure out if that person's right. Number one. It's interesting, that book by that gerontology guy, Cornell, one of the most interesting quotes in the book were people who said, you know, in a marriage, you have to give 100-100. Even though you can't give 100-100, it's 50-50, the reality is you have to give 100-100. Each of you has to want to give to the other without being a ledger keeper about how much the other is giving to you. And that's what you have to go to. Now, that doesn't happen right away. It takes years of a relationship to get to that point, but that has to be your goal. So that's take-home message number one, is on the connection. Number two has to do with, how do you fight? You know, there's the baseball card study. It's a bizarre study, and I'll talk about dating in a second. Some strange psychologist got a hold of the pictures used when people posed and smiled for baseball cards of every Major League Baseball player, I guess from the late 1800s until the 1950s. And he did two things. He measured how wide their smile was and how long they lived. It's a little bit of a bizarre study, but I guess people were told to just smile. And it turned out there was a direct linear correlation. The more somebody smiled, or the wider their smile, the longer their life. Now, that's a little bit of a bizarre study. I don't quite understand it. What does it have to do with dating? What it has to do with dating is they have similar studies about what's predictive of successful relationships. And it's basically, you want somebody who knows how to forgive. You want somebody who's able to, in spite of her anger at you, to hold on to memories and a deep feeling of how much she loves you as well. You want somebody who's going to be able to be somewhat of an optimist. I'm not saying you should run for the hills if you're going out with somebody who's a pessimist. But I'm saying you want somebody who, in spite of her pessimism, is also able to let go of her anger and isn't a grudge keeper, isn't an injustice collector. Some people, they hold on to everything that you've done to them, and they say, I can't believe you once did that. And then they forgive you, but then it comes up again. It rears its ugly head again. And that's the second core ingredient, is how does she handle conflict, and how do you handle conflict with her? If in fighting you find that at times it leads to personal attacks on you, you feel criticized, and you feel, probably most importantly, that it's hard for her to really let go, that's a bad sign. That's not a good sign. So that's number two. And then number three, and I'm going to give it over to Dr. Sobolewski. Number three has to do with what I last talked about, which has to do with goals. And I think that might be perhaps the single most important thing, is you really do. And this has to do with readiness to date also. You have to have clarity about what kind of life you want to share. You have to be more or less on the same page. Not with the small stuff. You know, you don't have to know whether or not you're going to send your kids to exactly the same yeshiva or what shul or neighborhood you're going to live in. Nobody here today is going to be in the same place spiritually or religiously 10 years from now than you are today. Nobody here today is going to learn Parshas Yisro 10 years from today, the same way you learn Parshas Yisro when you get ready for this coming week's Parsha. Life's about constant religious change. And the key thing is that you have to marry somebody who you could sort of grow at each other's side. But you do have to more or less have a vision about what kind of Shabbos table do you want, okay? What kind of general set of values do you have? Maybe we could talk about this a little bit later, but that is extremely important. Because if you're looking at the long-term predictability is couples don't have to think alike. They have to think together. And they have to think together coming more or less from the same vision and the same dream. Reminded of Yaakov when he was preparing his family for the fateful encounter with Esav. He said, you have to prepare yourself with three questions. What were the three questions? Who are you? Where are you going? And what do you want to do with what you have? And the Rav would say that those three questions are in a way what goes into the self-knowledge and the self-awareness that you have in terms of seriously thinking about spending your life with somebody. You have to know, who are you? You have to know, what are you going to do with your strengths? What's your uniqueness? What are your signature strengths? And most importantly, where are you going? And is this the person that you could do it together with? Now, that's largely a leap of faith. You have to feel that more or less you have that similar vision, that similar chazon in order to get there. I think what I'm going to do next, I think you spoke about literally everything, which is great. Because it means that when we get to the discussion, we'll be able to talk about it.
Can I also, just to break things up, we're going to have a few questions now, and then we'll continue with the Rebbetzin's presentation afterwards. So does anybody have any questions right now? Because that was a quick one, I'm just going to ask a question myself. So the question is, when it comes to peace, how long should it take for the relationship to be progressing? When is it a standstill? How fast
should
we move? What's slow?
What's
fast?
Well, I'm very not into sort of shittas in life. Like, you have to be dating this amount of time, this amount of days. So to sort of say, to put like a number on when something's a standstill or not a standstill, you know, that's something hard to evaluate. I think every couple, and many of you probably been in a situation, gets to a point where you feel like it is a standstill. You're not really gaining much more knowledge about her. She's not getting much more about you. You're not really getting closer. You really think you should be getting engaged. You're not really ready to get engaged. And all of a sudden, when that happens, when you hit a standstill, as any of you know from relationships, what ends up happening is that certain things are going in the other direction. Because all you do is speak about the standstill. Right? How are we doing today? And then every 5 minutes, you're sort of taking the temperature of the relationship. And there's nothing that kills a relationship more than speaking every single day about the relationship. And once you sort of hit that stage where it's a standstill, you're not really sure what to do. You don't want to break up. You're not really ready to get engaged. Usually what I found under those circumstances, it's very good to have a third party involved to help you sort of sort through the issues. Sometimes maybe a little bit of a break is not necessarily the worst thing, to have a little time away from each other. But once you get to that stage, a real standstill, it's very difficult for the couple themselves to sort of work their way through it without having a little bit of like a guiding hand of how to sort of get beyond why there's a standstill. So when you're at that point, whatever that is, then I think you sort of need a little bit of either a push or a navigation to sort of get through that.
It also means that sometimes when you're at a standstill, it may be a sign that you need to be doing different things when you're together. Sometimes people just get into a rut with what they're doing
right.
When they're going out. And it may mean that you have to be a little bit more self-revelatory in your discussions. You have to your self-disclosure may have to go up a little bit more. You may have to, in terms of just the things that you're doing, maybe you should be doing different stuff. Maybe you need to. By the way, I mean, people don't always agree with me on this. I don't know how you could really know who you're marrying if you don't. Or who you're getting serious about, if you don't spend some time being exposed to her family, maybe spending Shabbos in her community and having a meal at her house. I can't tell you how often I've had people end up in my office who were sort of shocked at the real family that they married into as opposed to the fantasy family they married into. And sometimes that could have been dealt with much more readily had there been at least a little bit of exposure to the behind-the-scenes Shabbos table, the behind-the-scenes hanging out at somebody's house. I know there may be some problems with that in certain segments, but I'm a big believer from a psychological standpoint in doing that. But very often, if you're in a rut, the obvious thing to do is switch channels and start doing other stuff. And I love the idea of getting a third party involved also, because that can sometimes shake things up.
Some of you here are very, very comfortable with emotions, are very free, are very expressive, as I probably said. And many of you are not, and sometimes the standstill comes because people are not willing to share or express affection. It's very frustrating to the girl. And sometimes you need a little bit of like a push or sort of like a change in how you're approaching the relationship to sort of take things from the rut stage to a more progress stage.
And one more thing. Sometimes it's really about indecision. There seems to be a rise in that where guys and women are stuck because they just aren't certain. You know, they want that hataras hasfekos of knowing for sure exactly that this is the right person. And ultimately, it's going to be a leap of faith. Ultimately, you have to realize that probably at the beginning of a relationship, you're at the lowest point in terms of your connection. Once you end up together and you have a lifetime of sharing, a lifetime of mutual giving, the connection and the intimacy and the love grows. In America, there's the myth of the instant soulmate, and more than 90% of Americans believe that somehow you have to be head over heels in love with your soulmate. That's nonsense. It's I often tell the story of the guy who came to see me after one of my pastoral psychology classes. With that nauseous look on his face, the guys, sometimes Friday morning, I don't know, they went out Friday night and they want to talk to me about how their previous night's date goes. And one guy came to me and he said, I'm ready to get engaged. The problem is that the woman I'm going out with, I haven't hit the level yet where when her foot hurts, my foot hurts. That's the famous story of Ariel Foot, right? Who, you know, evidently went to the doctor, the podiatrist with his wife, and he said, our foot hurts. And what I had to tell them, as gently as I could, is, idiot. That took probably about 50 years of marriage.
That story is the worst thing happened to dating in history.
I know. It's like, it's not something that comes until years of closeness. Or maybe it's a little less than years of closeness. But the reality is you have to have realistic expectations that it only gets easier. And the basic ingredients are there. And you feel the basic attraction. And you feel the common goals. And you feel all the things you've been talking about are there. The likelihood, and by the way, there's almost always some focus on minor physical flaws. People get driven nuts that, I don't know, her nose looks a little crooked or things that you can't possibly remember once you end up together. But that's often a common kind of thing. And some guys are perfectionists and some guys are obsessive. And if you find that you're obsessive and have a hard time making major decisions in your life and you keep getting stuck at that point, you have to tell yourself, hey, wait a second, this may be more about my indecisiveness and less about that.
I can just add to that also, again, there's the average guy here deals with some anxiety before they get engaged or while they're dating or they get to that stage. And I would just say that there's really a chiluk between anxiety and anxiety. Anybody that realizes they're making far and away the biggest decision of their life, who are you marrying? If I have to estimate, it's probably 1,000 times more important than any other decision you'll ever make. And I think that you're going to make the decision at age 23.
That took care of their anxiety. They're not nervous at all.
Now just relax. Now, I think you're not going to be nervous. You're not going to be anxious. Of course you're going to be. And of course it's going to be that's totally normal. And then there's anxiety where really it's beyond that. A person can't sleep and they have anxiety about other things. Decision making. That's often an anxiety that's not going to take care of it by itself. But if the person has a real issue with anxiety, making decisions about this or anything else, I very much recommend you do yourself a favor. There are excellent people in the food community, the names I should give you, that deal with these issues. Again, minor anxiety is normal for any person that thinks about relationships. Something that's more major is certainly something that I would not try to deal with yourself, only by yourself, and certainly something that, that should be brought to be dealt with in a little bit more of a serious way. I'm sorry. But,
Let's say, like, if you're going out with this girl and you think things are going well and it doesn't, and for some reason she ends it, how much should you go out of your way to figure out exactly why she ended it?
That's a good question. It's always very painful, especially if you're really serious about her and she dumps you. It feels, in some ways, it's almost like if it's somebody you've really been close to, it feels almost like a death. Because it's the loss of your future. Here you have these fantasies that this is your future. This is who you're spending the rest of your life with. Mm. And now, you know, it's extremely painful when somebody does that to you. In terms of hearing the basic reasons behind it, I think that's extremely helpful because it'll help with self-awareness. And it may really have nothing to do with you. It may be more about her, to use a cliche. But the reality is, I think it's important to hear what she has to say, because you could grow from it, and you could learn for the next relationship. And if she's a caring person, she'll share with you. And it may very well have absolutely nothing to do. That's the thing you always have to remember. When you go out, it's making yourself vulnerable. And it's a little scary, because there are going to be people who just aren't going to want to go out with you in the future. Maybe for reasons that are connected to you, maybe for reasons connected to her. But no matter what, it says nothing about you as a person, the fact that it's not a two-way match. That's fine. But to find that, I think, makes sense. But when it starts crossing the line to your becoming self-critical, beating yourself up, and taking it too personally, that's not so great. I like to quote the Rav Nachman. When his Hasidim came to him and said that the Misnagdim were saying terrible things about him, he said, they have nothing against me. They only have something against the person they think I am, and he deserves it. Mm-hmm. Okay? If that's what she thinks you are, that's okay. You know, it doesn't really say anything about you. Okay?
Diego? Yeah. So you both spoke about, I guess, two aspects of, like, dating itself, like the initial meeting and finding out the right qualities and then the actual marriage. What about in between? How do you develop, once you find somebody who has those qualities that you like and you want, how do you develop them into actually a strong relationship that you can get to the marriage part?
And what do you do specifically?
Like, what are some things to do to focus on in the developing stage of a relationship?
Yeah, Dr. Sabalasi, you've had a lot of experience with that.
So, shall I address it in my... So basically, I would say that from the beginning, like you said, and then bringing it back to the end, I would try as much as I can to try to get to know the person better and also have her get to know you better. Move it from the beginning stages of just, you know, basic, what's the right word, superficial questions, but try to be more vulnerable, ask her about, you know, what was her... I could give you examples, but each person works differently. More meaningful parts of her life and more meaningful parts of your life. That's one way just to continue making the relationship move forward. Another piece, which I was going to mention in my little presentation, but I'll say it now, is also to be complementary. And I don't mean complimentary in an inappropriate way. Each person, again, knows who they're dating and what the person is expecting for them to say not. But it's very important as you progress in a relationship, especially if you're interested in the young lady that you're seeing, to say things that show the person that you care about them, that you're interested in them. Let's pretend they say, and I'm not necessarily saying, you know, that's a beautiful outfit that you're wearing, because some people might say that that's not appropriate to say at the beginning of dating. But even if the person tells you about something, let's say like Ray Blass and Dr. Hubowitz was talking about the marathon, while their children were running, my children were sleeping, so I'm not in the same boat as them. But if, let's say, someone did something like that, to really make a fuss and say, that's amazing, that must have been so hard for you, those kinds of expressions to show that whatever the person is telling you about, whatever the person is interested in, whatever the person is focusing on during that part of their life is important to you. You're taking it a step further. Even if you know nothing about a marathon, you know, an example that came up yesterday was a girl was dating a guy that he loves tennis, and she doesn't know anything about tennis. So the coach that was talking to her at YU Connect said something like, so learn about tennis a little bit. Read a little bit about tennis. I mean, don't just say, he likes tennis, I don't like tennis. If tennis is such a part of his life, whatever part you can say, learn a little bit about the U.S. Open. I don't know if it's time, but that was the, it might be that I'm in the wrong season, but I'm just, the person was really trying to say that she wants to learn more and make the young man that she's dating feel that she's interested in him, but she's having trouble stretching herself to the places where she knows nothing about. I would say the same thing in the other way. Like if a girl talks to you about certain parts, or she says to you, for example, I'm so nervous tomorrow, I'm having a big exam, or I'm so excited tomorrow, my grandmother's coming in from Israel, there's something beautiful about texting her or calling her the next day and saying something like, how was that test that you were worried about? Or, you must be so happy your grandmother came in today. Whatever it is, those kinds of meaningful moments, like my husband just texted me right before I came in saying something like, tell them that you're my favorite date. I won't say that, but he was trying to make me feel good, like, don't be nervous, it's going to be wonderful, but that's what he texted me at 9:29. He stopped watching the kids for that one moment just to show me that he cares. And as Dr. Kalkowitz and Rabbi Glass said so beautifully, this is not something that ends during dating. This is something that you want to continue ongoing. So if it's not happening in dating, I would be more worried that you need to take care of that during dating so that it happens throughout a lifetime of marriage. That you want the person to feel that you care about them, and that the opposite is true too, that the person cares about you, that you are interested in what they're talking about. You know, we all know today, unfortunately, how we could tune out. You know, through the phones, through other means of communication. People are talking to you and you're really not listening. You know, my children say that to me sometimes. You know, you're not really listening. You're talking, you're texting, you're on the phone, you're not listening to me. And it's true. But at the same time, the reverse is true too, that a person knows when you are paying attention. And when you said something and you realize that, you know, like my husband remembered that I'm speaking at 9:30, even though I think I told him to start at 9:30, but like the fact that he remembered that busy with the kids and all the mess in the house, that means that it's on his mind at 9:20 to call me or to say something like that. Those are important milestones in building relationships. And especially, as they both, Dr. Falkland and Robert Glass said so beautifully, especially when it's a self-expansion exercise for you. I mean, like, you really don't care about shopping. You really don't care about the great dish that she's making tomorrow because you really don't care about food. You'd eat anything. But you heard from her that she's so excited because she's baking this cake, whatever that she's trying to tell you. So pretend for the moment. Call her and say, how did that big thing that you were making work out for you? Because you would want the same thing. I don't know much about learning along with that. But sometimes when my husband calls me, like, it was real big, so he's really giving me a hard time that day, I'll say something like, how did it work out for you? Even though I don't really know what I'm saying, but it just shows. No, it's okay. Even though I don't know what I'm saying, he knows that I'm trying to show that what's important to him is important to me. What's important to me is what's important to him. And then the other thing that I think is important, since you asked a great question, is don't be afraid over the course of a relationship to say certain things to the girl. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying something like, I'm really having such a nice time with you. I'm looking forward, you know, to seeing you again next week or whatever you're going out with her again. How do you feel things are going? People can't always read minds of the other people. You can't assume that the other person knows where you're holding, like he's about to get engaged and she's nowhere near, or the opposite, she's waiting for him to propose and he's just so far away from that, or maybe they're a little bit closer. But it's really considered appropriate for the male over the course of the time that they're dating to say something like, how do you think things are going? And also, the reverse also, I'm not just, you know, talking about the man, to say something to the girl, like if there's anything that bothers you, or if there's anything that, if you want to ask me how things are going, feel free to at any point, leaving those doors open, those communication doors open throughout a relationship where you're interested in the girl is a wonderful way to help nurture it and grow it and plant seeds so that when it's time for it to move forward, it's not like it came out of nowhere. I mean, it's something that was built. And again, it continues. It doesn't just end the day that you get married. It shouldn't end. If it does, then that's frightening.
two things to bounce on. When you think somebody, when you show somebody that you like, but also one of the biggest predictors of a relationship growing is if the other person thinks that you like them. It creates an upward kind of expansion of the depth of the relationship. So that's especially, it doesn't mean you should fake it, because sometimes that could have its own problems. But the other part is that another predictor of a relationship being a good, solid relationship is the ability to meta-communicate, which means communicate about communication. There's something that guys don't necessarily have a lot of experience in doing. To be able to talk about the relationship and say, you know, I have a hard time talking about my feelings, but I really want to work on it, or I really love it when we do this, or I love when we do that. It's talking about the relationship in a way that you don't necessarily do when you're living with your chavrus, or you don't necessarily do when you're hanging out with a bunch of friends in your dorm room. But that, it turns out, is a skill that men often develop with their wives and develop during dating, and it's something you get better at time, with time. But it's a good thing to practice. That's exactly, you know, those ingredients that help build a relationship.
You guys want to follow up?
Okay. Okay, so this, I'll just stand up so that I can read my notes.
You want to show you how to stand?
No. Okay. Basically, I...
Should we text your husband to say you're starting to talk?
No. Okay, so I was asked to speak about the other side of the story, which Yitz translated for me, to try to speak about like the girl's perspective in dating. So I'm going to do a little bit about that. I'm also, if I may, going to give you a little bit of a Shachan's perspective also, because I feel like being that I am the YU Connects office across the street, I want to make sure that you understand both sides of the women that you're dealing with. Sometimes, obviously, more importantly, is the women you're dating, but people who are trying to set you up are also women on the other side of the story. Okay. As both of the panelists mentioned beautifully, if you could go into dating, I think Reverend Glass said it, highlighted it, not chas v'chalila as a chore, but as an unbelievable opportunity to get to know somebody, even if it's not the woman that you're going to marry. Each time you go on a date, it's a wonderful opportunity to learn something new about the person you're in front of, to learn something new about yourself, to learn something about how you interact with the other person. You can't just go into the date of like, okay, she's not for me, next. I mean, it might be that she's not for me, next. But before you do the next, you have to engage. Give yourself an opportunity to get to know her, learn something new about her, let her learn something new about you, and really view it as, it's a relationship. Whether it works or whether it doesn't work, you had that relationship with her for 10 minutes, not hopefully not 10 minutes, but I'm saying, but for like, you know, the 2 hours that you're with. Because when you get older like me, you know, I sometimes go to parent-teacher conference and I'm sitting next to a husband and a wife that I went out with once or twice or three times, and I'm just thinking, I don't go back and think what happened. But those kinds of situations, you're very young, Baruch Hashem. When you get older, you'll realize that those meaningful moments that you had earlier make a difference of whether the person treated you like a mensch or whether the person, you know, mistreated you on a date. And I'll give you examples of what that means in a few minutes. But just really, like, I think that one of the goals of dating is that, and my husband told me this also, he told me this, after we got married, he said one of his goals, because some of you know we went out for many years before we met, and he said that his goal was that each time you should never come home and feel like I mistreated someone, that she could say something bad about me, even if it doesn't work out. Maybe there are people, I don't know, but even if it didn't work out, it's not that the person could say I didn't offer her a drink, or I didn't do this, or I didn't do that. So really view it as it's an opportunity. And if you tune out, remember, the person really knows that. Like, I could still remember which guys on dates that I went out with just dismissed me right away, which is fine, that they weren't interested, which is okay. But the fact that people still remember that is not a good feeling. So just view each opportunity as an opportunity. The other thing, which might sound obvious to many of you in the room, but unfortunately it's not, plan the date. Take time to plan the date, to show effort. One of the nicest things that a girl likes to feel, again, even if she's not marrying you, is he took time to plan the date. I spend an hour washing my hair or doing my makeup or whatever I have to do for it. he took a, you know, half hour to figure out where we're going, to rent a car, or to arrange how he's going to come here. Not that you go on a date. He has no clue. And unfortunately, I wish I didn't have to say this publicly, but it is common because I'm hearing it all the time. He had no idea where we're going. We went into Starbucks. There was nowhere to sit down. So then we went outside and we just walked around for more until he found the next Starbucks. And there was no place to sit down, so we went to the next one. Recently, and I'm from California, so I'm cold. It's freezing outside. I've heard in the past month, many, many girls, and Dr. Palkowitz can attest because I've called him about a few of them, the guys don't even bring them indoors. It's freezing outside. So she's walking around shivering. Not a hot chocolate, not a hot cocoa or anything, or a coffee, but just walking the streets in Manhattan. And I'm being serious. And these are guys who are really young, and these are guys. I just heard this also yesterday. A guy who's 35, he went out 5 times with a girl, not 1 time inside. I don't understand it. Maybe you'll know why he's 35 and not married yet. And these are mentions, and these were boys that were sitting where you're sitting. I know who they are, and I'm like, shaken by that kind of situation of how you could not just not plan. Now again, it could be that you flop. Sometimes you go to the place, I didn't know it was closed, I bought the tickets and it was the wrong show, whatever it is, that happens all the time. But if a person doesn't put effort into it, especially the man, especially at the beginning of dating, I know sometimes after you go out for a few times, you could turn to the girl and say something like, you know, maybe you want to tell me what you want to do next time, maybe you want to plan the date. I've heard that some of the boys are doing that. That might be fine after a few times of showing that you're the man and that you could, you know, take charge and give her options of where you're going. But really, to really make a dinner fresh one of where we're going, we're not just to go in nowhere's land and just drive down the turnpike and have nowhere to go. Stop at a rest stop. No, that's not appropriate. Another thing is if you could and if you speak to the girl before you go out with her, and even if you don't, even if for some reason you're speaking through an intermediary, I still think you should call the girl directly. But if for some reason you feel like you can't, I could be in the next panel, I can address that. But for now, maybe it's a nice thing for you to say something like, you know, I'll pick you up at 7 after dinner, which means that the girl will understand that she should eat dinner at home. Or I'll pick you up at 6, would you like to eat dinner? Or, you know, would you like to go miniature golfing? Whatever you're doing, it gives the girl a certain sense of how to dress, should she eat before. Again, I'm being very honest. When you hear from girls that they come home sometimes 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, they didn't eat anything, they assumed he was going to take her out, she dressed in high heels, and you took her someplace where it was like, you know, running around type of thing. Just to be sensitive and cognizant of, like, how can I help this person? Again, it doesn't mean that you can't change the plan and modify a little bit, but to have some kind of showing to the person that you calculated, you thought of it, you were trying to think of what works for her. I heard I'm picking you up after work. Is that usually a time that you're hungry? Is that usually a time that, I don't know, it's just to kind of think ahead of what the person might want to do. And yeah, make sure that if it's cold that you plan to go inside and keep going. The other thing, I know this sounds a little tacky, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's not a good idea also on dates, especially at the beginning, until you're very comfortable with the person, to like, bitch, this is so expensive. Or, you know how much time I spent preparing for this date? I had to shave and this and whatever you have to do. You go on about that, it makes the person that you're with, like, just feel like, why am I here? Even if you like her, it's a total turn off. But if you don't like her, still she's going to remember those kinds of, like, what a pain, it's so expensive, and you know how many bridges I crossed to get here? That's life. It's true. Kafka said, these things cost money. That's what, you know, like they said, life is stressful, life costs money. We drive over the bridge 17 times a day between my husband and I. Tough. We don't see an advantage or complain. You know, you have to move forward and make the person feel like you really, well, I'll give you a good example, and I asked my husband permission to say this. We went out a few times, and some of you will appreciate this, because I was from California, and I came to Ward Twilight for the summer, and my husband was going up to Marashah. So he agreed to go out with me if I went out before he started Marashah, because he didn't like to date while he was in Marashah, because he wanted either to be involved in a relationship or just to learn for the summer. So I went out with him a few times before Marashah started, and I didn't really know anything about the mountains. I never went to camp here. I grew up in California. We didn't do that then. So a few dates after we went out, he told me that he's going to Marashah, and I understood that it's far. It's like 3 hours, right? And so it's further, but then it was just Marashah. So I said to him something like, I heard where you're going is a little far. Like, I don't know, you know, don't feel obligated to come down so much. So he said to me, it was, I forgot exactly how many dates. You'll ask him, he'll know. I don't have the memory that he does. But I remember he said, Yaakov worked for Rachel for 7 years plus a few days. 3 hours is not so bad. I could handle it. So I remember I was like, okay, he must be serious about this relationship. But later on when I asked him, because I was touched, and later on when I asked him, he said, like, he said to me, dating was part of his avodah, and dating was part of his life, and you put effort into it. Anything you put effort into it, hopefully when the right person comes along, is, even if it's the first person, it has more meaning when life, you know, when it all works out for you. Okay, don't drive dangerously. I know you're laughing at me, but this comes up a lot, where girls are like, I was so scared for my life. He was, it sounds funny, but it's not. He was curving through everybody and making faces at everybody. Yeah.
A tremendous turn off if you don't know how to drive.
Yes, you don't. If you don't know,
if you don't know how to drive,
learn how
to drive.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than being picked off every single time by a girl on the date.
Yeah.
You get total never.
Right. I was with you. And then also, like, you can't expect her to come, and she has to drive to you, and then 2 hours just because you don't drive, right? Okay. That was the thing I wanted to say about that. Be careful also when you speak negatively about others. While it's very important when you get comfortable with the young girl that you're dating, it's totally fine to tell them about challenging relationships you have with this one, or, you know, I don't get along so well with this brother, I don't get along so well with this cousin, or be careful, my father might say this. All of that has to be tempered. But when you first go out and you just lay it all out and you just spill it all out, like, I hate this one, I hate that one, I'm the worst in school, all the teachers hate me, you just have to kind of think of, like, what the person thinks about you, because you kind of put yourself in things down below. Even though afterwards, when I'll call a guy upon it, he'll say something like, I was just kidding, or I was just trying to, you know, make light of the situation. But to think a little bit more about being positive. And I'm not saying to hide things. I'm just saying that there's a time and a place. It's not, the first time you go out. You don't have to tell them about all the girls you went out with before, and this one wasn't nice to you, and that one wasn't nice to you. You have to be careful just to make the best impression, even, again, if you're not going to marry her. It's like an interview. I know it's different than a job interview, but you don't tell them all the negative things, like, I'm always going to be late to work, I'm a slob. So, I mean, I would not have been able to go out after I heard that from anybody, but you, that's me. But don't just, like, lay it all out like that. Just be a little more careful as to making a good impression, being positive, saying positive things about people. And then as the relationship progresses, you could be a little more open, obviously. And as you feel safe, you could definitely share your vulnerabilities with the other person. Complimenting, okay, we spoke about that. I just wanted to speak, in case I forgot anything else, just about the Shaftan perspective. We all know that because you're the men in the room, and because you're the ones who are, let's say, lucky to call the shots in terms of who you date and who you say yes to. I'm going to word it carefully, because, like, I don't like to make any girls feel like they're on the lower end, or the men are up high and the women are below. Because I think as the relationship progresses, you'll see that men and women have a beautiful relationship together. It's a partnership. He's not, you know, in charge. She's not in charge. It's hopefully a fusion that goes together. But let's just talk about the beginning stages. When people call you up, whether it's official shadchanim, not official shadchanim, rabbeim here, not rabbeim, whatever you want to say, sometimes people call you to give you a suggestion of a girl that they have in mind for you. And I know this might sound silly, so some of you might listen and say, what is she talking about? But unfortunately, it's very common. Even if, because you might get a lot of phone calls, you might get a few phone calls, it's irrelevant. Have the common decency to call back people. Sometimes we'll call boys and say, I have this idea for you. The ones who call back and say something like, Rebbetzin Sobolovsky, or forget Rebbetzin Sobolovsky, whatever they want to call me, I'm in the middle of midterms, I can't date for the next few weeks, call me back. Or, I'm seeing someone now, thank you so much for thinking of me, but, you know, maybe try to set it up with someone else. There's a marked difference between those who just don't call back. And I personally don't think, at the beginning when I started, you know, when we started YU Connects, I first thought something like, you know, where are their needles? Where are their, what happened to the fact that they just don't even call back? I don't understand it. Now I'm feeling, because it's so common, that it's because, maybe it's because the boys walk around with a feeling like, you know, girls are, you know, there's a dime a dozen, and if I don't call her back, don't worry, tomorrow she'll call me, so I don't need her, and I'll call. You can't, you know, burn your bridges, and it's just basic mental health. Even we get a lot of phone calls. I'm sure Ari Glass gets a lot of phone calls. Dr. Puckwitz gets a lot more phone calls. At some point, you call people back, and you just say, you know, I thought I can't talk to you right now, but thank you for thinking of me. She's not for me. And I get continuous calls, continuous complaints from people who try to set you up voluntarily, just to say, I'm not talking about, sorry, anybody in this room, because I don't know all of your names, but when a person doesn't just call back and have the decency, oh, the chaplain that texted me last night, she said something like, I called the boy 3 weeks ago, and I gave him a detailed suggestion, he didn't call me back. Then I texted him 2 nights ago just to say, how's it going? Is it, you know, can you just call me back? He didn't call back. And these are lovely women who are volunteering their time. Even if you're not interested, it's more polite to just text us back or call us back just to say something like, it's not for you. Because the fact that it is the man's way to pursue the women, and it, you know, and, or whatever the chazal is, the pasuk is, that it should be the man that goes after the woman. Reality should never be abused. And unfortunately, sometimes it is. And it's abused, not in a bad way, abusing, like someone's chas v'chalila, abusing somebody else. That's not what I'm saying. But that privilege of, you know, you're getting a lot of phone calls. Maybe the girl that we're talking about is not getting as many phone calls, not because she's not a good girl, not because she's not, and there's a lot of, you know, reasons and factors, and if you read the Mishpacha and you read all these magazines, I could send you millions of different theories as to, are there more girls, are there more boys? You could read the Yated this week, and you could read the Mishpacha this week, and you could read Ami, they all have 3 different explanations, and I could write my own. It's irrelevant. Menschlichkeit is Menschlichkeit. If you were looking for a job, and somebody calls you, even if it was like a lead that wasn't so great, you would call back, just out of common decency, just to call back. And also, if someone sets you up, even if it doesn't work out, call back the next morning just to say something like, you know, I'm interested in going out with her again, or I'm not interested in going out with her again, but thank you so much for setting me up, and, you know, here's some feedback. Maybe I'm looking for something a little bit more like this, or maybe I'm looking for something a little bit more like that. Sharkanim, or whoever's trying to set you up, are so appreciative when you give them feedback. It also shows on your part that you're self-reflective, that you didn't just come home and dismiss and say, she's not for me, but you went home and you said something like, I think I might meet someone more like this, or I think I dismissed her too early, I should give it another try. But to not have matchmakers or whoever is setting you up, and it could be your friends, it doesn't have to be a person, Sharkanim, tell me that they tried to reach you for 2 days and you didn't call back to say whether, you know, it worked out Monday night or it didn't. If you say that you're going to call a girl, even if for some reason you find out that you don't want to anymore, just call. And let's say you say you agree to go out with someone and then you find out she's totally not for me. And you find out why. If there's no blatant, usher reason why you can't not go out with her, just out of the common decency, go out with her for the 2 hours. Maybe you'll know someone else for her. But once you commit to something, it makes a person feel awful. And like Adam said before, the reverse is also like, if a girl does that to you, and I've seen the other side also, like, I can't believe she said no after I finally said yes, the egos get involved. Instead of just, do you like her? The relationship should play more of a prominence than the back and forth of, you know, how long you call back and how many days you call back. So definitely call back, give people feedback, and like Dr. Buckwood said before, if you're going out with someone and you think the relationship has a lot of potential, but that you feel like you need a little bit more of this, or does she need a little bit more of that, have open lines of communication so that you could ask her, you know, am I doing this well? Do you think I should be more like this, more like that? Anywhere you're willing to grow is something that's important. The last thing I would just say, hopefully echoing on what they're saying, is that continue reading. It doesn't end when you get married. It doesn't end when you get engaged. It ends, hopefully it shouldn't end until 120. We all I'm sure they would agree with the same. We all can continue to work on our relationships. I could for sure work on my relationship with my husband. I could for sure work better on my relationship with my children. I'm always making mistakes, but we always try to improve and do better. So the more you read, you get, you know, your hands not just on the YU Connects Tour and Go type of thing, but I'm just giving an example because the next one's coming out soon with another 15 articles, but books that Dr. Popowitz recommends, continuous education, God willing, one day before your parents, parenting classes even before your parents, because the more you're armed and prepared and you feel richer in the education that you get here at Yeshiva or elsewhere, the better of a husband and a father that you could be.
I just add this one thing to the other solution. There's one thing I just, as far as dating, first of all, the impressions you make now with these things often last a lifetime. I can think of where I was standing, speaking to guys 10 years ago. I asked them, do you want to go with a certain girl? And he's like, no, mother looked into it, no thanks. What an arrogant, and I see him 10 years later, and I think back to the impression that he made then, whether it's about dating or anything else, the way that you convey yourself, the way you speak, the thanks you give, the follow-up emails, the follow-up phone calls, make all the difference in the world and life. One thing I would say, just, you don't realize often, there are often guys here, there are very limited girls out there. The girls who went to Michala and Hawaii, whatever the case is, you probably, many of you already know who they are. If you went out with a girl, and then you find out that your friend's going out with her, and your friend asks you about a girl, or even you, and even the slightest comment that you may make in a certain type of way, well, I didn't really see that for you. When a guy's sort of insecure, there's like, the slightest comment that you make about another girl can really, I wouldn't say end the person's life, but really end that person's prospects. You have to be so super careful, not just about Lashon Hara, but even the smallest intonation, facial expression, or any comment that you make. And that's why, to some degree, I would recommend using YU Connects, and that's because I trust Avi Soloski. Sometimes your friends setting you up, no offense to any of you here, know very little about marriage, who have been either not married or married for 2 months, and they're trying to be moderate in your relationship when they know sort of not so much of themselves. You guys may be amazing, but you don't have sort of years of experience. Even if you're the person that's getting, as many of you are, 3-4 names every 5 minutes, well, with different people, and you say, why do I have to go to YU Connects? I have a list of 5,720 people to go date. I would still recommend speaking to people that are older, going to YU Connects, sitting down with people and getting their judgment, and often using an older person as a shotgun, it really avoids a lot of those issues that I just mentioned, and I very, very highly recommend people doing it. Even if you feel like, why do I need it? I have so many names already. And Baruch Hashem, you should be very grateful. Not a lot of people have that, many people don't have that, so you should be grateful for that situation.
I remember, just one more thing on that. Even if you're not dating someone through YU Connects, you definitely come across the street. Many of the young men do. Like, they're dating someone seriously, and they're not sure about this, and not sure about that. So it doesn't have to be that we set you up, but you're welcome to come. You know, we've had that a lot of times, where right before the boys are getting, they're proposing, they get all nervous. So you could always come and call and say, can we speak to someone? I'm happy to speak to you, if that could be helpful. And what Rabbi Glass said is important. Like, even if it's not us, just some kind of dating mentor, or somebody older than you, not someone like, again, not someone that's just your close friend, but someone who will be self-reflective and will be able to say to you something like, you know, I don't think you handled that date so well. Or, I mean, maybe they could say it in a nice way, whatever you decide, but someone that you look up to, someone that you would say, you know, I would love a marriage like that person if I could have it. So those older people, whether it's us or others, that could give you some kind of perspective and that you could use them to bounce ideas off you. You're not going to be like, you're wonderful, you did nothing wrong. Sometimes you need, you know, when I gave guidance when I lived in the Heights and I was young girl, when we first got married, sometimes people still tell me some of the advice that I gave, and it was really wrong. Mama's wrong. Like, one time somebody asked me if she should go out with a certain person, and I said something like, no, I don't think it's for you at all. Meantime, she married, like, his twin brother. And every time I bump into these people, I'm like, and she reminds me, remember you told me? I'm like, every time I see them at a wedding, I go the other way, because it was like the stupidest thing I said. She married someone very close, yeah. You know, it was just silly advice.
You know, I was just thinking, because what you said before, I had a thought of, I just got back from Israel.
Yeah.
And there were two people, I'm old, there were two people I met on the street in Israel just last week, who I'd gone out with. And one of them, we were talking about, you know, the olden days. And I was thinking that, you know, we live in such an overgrown bungalow colony. You feel like it's anonymous, and you feel like it's not going to come back to haunt you. People really have memories.
True.
I mean, I did appropriate things on those with those people, but and one of them, I gave a talk last week in Yerushalayim, and a girl I'd gone out with for couple of months was in the front row. That's the best story.
I just wanted to say one last thing. This is the text that's up in the voice this morning was, maybe you should just tell them in a minute or two what girls are looking for in a date. In a guy, not just in a date, like in the plan of date. I got the text a little bit later in the day, but I didn't make like a whole long list. But I just was thinking of a few important character traits that I think we could all work on, unless we already have them, that I think if you'd ask most girls, this is what they're looking for. Definitely a person who has self-awareness and self-confidence, not arrogance, but a certain amount of self-confidence. He knows what he's doing in life, even if he changes it along the, you know, even if in 2 years from now he decides, okay, law school wasn't for me, I'm doing something different. But someone who has like direction, goals in life, and confidence, not arrogance. There's a big difference between arrogance and confidence. And also respect, like just respect of the person, also respect of the family that you're dating. Meaning you can't go out and say something like, your brother, he's like impossible. Or your mother, what a nag. Maybe later on in life, you could figure out how to say that in a different way.
Never.
But I never. You can learn to keep it up by ink from many of these people, but just to recognize that when you say those kinds of things, it really contaminates and it makes the person feel like, I can't believe you just said that in that kind of way. So that's basically it, unless there's any more
questions. Okay, so we'll just do a few last questions. Just to make sure we have time. Well, the parents are encouraged to be happy today. Please text me my message. Just a quick question. What are the appropriate gedarim during dating? Like, how often to speak and texting? And is speaking every night an issue?
I would say not to suffocate the girl. That's the other thing. You need to have some kind of balance of like calling whatever you decide, whether it's every day when you like her, or whether it's every other day, but there has to be a balance of like suffocating. Sometimes the people, girls or boys, and Rabbi Blasser, he mentioned it before, like if the girl or the boy is texting the whole day, like they can't do anything else but how are you, what are you doing, where are you up to, where are you, it sometimes becomes suffocating to the person. And then they say to themselves, I had this once, where a person says something like, it worries me that they have nothing else meaningful to do in their life during the day, that they just are hanging on this all the time. So there has to be a balance of, every circumstance is different. I don't know so many times. But
if I could just say this one thing, I think there has to be a real balance. Sometimes a couple goes out, and this actually is probably one of the worst things about texting relationships. You know, a couple can go out, you can have one of these like long 7-hour dates, you know, the first week to go twice for 7 hours, then they're on the phone, and then they're texting. And after about 2 weeks of the relationship, you feel like the relationship is so intense and so involved and so committed, and it feels like you've been going out for 2-3 months because you text each other 7 times a day and you're on the phone. It's actually very unhealthy in my mind, because the relationship really has not progressed healthy in a way. You haven't spent the right time together. You haven't allowed it to develop. But because of all the multimedia, the texting, the phone calls, there's already an intensity of emotion that doesn't really match the actual place where the relationship's at. So I think you want to go out a lot. But if you go out too much and you're too intense and too much, so it's almost like after 2-3 weeks, you feel like you're committed to each other, where you're just really learning about the person now. So I wouldn't really overdo it. Let's sort of have like a balance of that type of communication.
One more thing is that there's this study, and I think this has relevance. This study came out very recently where they took a group of teenage girls and their mothers, and they did something upsetting to the teenage girls, and their mothers were not around. Half of them were randomly assigned to a group that they texted their mother for comfort. The other half were assigned to a group where they called their mother on their cell phones for comfort. And then they measured physiologic correlates of stress, salivary cortisol, prolactin levels, etc. Turned out, texting did absolutely nothing in terms of calming the girls down. The phone calls did. But just something to keep in mind. Texting is, it's a pseudo-intimacy. And when a relationship is built too much on that kind of cold medium, it could lead to sort of the illusion of closeness, but it's not real. So in the balance, when you're building a relationship, it shouldn't rely overly much on texting. Texting is great for, you know, if you're going to be 10 minutes late to picking somebody up, or if you're going to be, you know, it has its place, but it shouldn't be the main building block.
All right, so just moving on, please continue with the questions. What is a girl, I guess more of a follow-up, what's a girl looking for a guy in a religious, neatos perspective? How religious should be, you know?
So religiously, I think it depends on the girl. Everyone's different, you know. Sometimes we all judge religiously not in the right way, meaning like we're watching how the guy is davening or how the girl is davening. That might not necessarily show how the person really, how religious they are. So it's hard, you know, it's hard to really be the din shamayim to decide how religious the person is. I would definitely say that there are certain core values that you could just see how the person's talking and maybe how the person's dressing to a certain degree, but at the same time, measuring every little thing, like how many bar Torahs did he say, or how many asher yatsars did they say, it gets a little dangerous when you start measuring those things, unless they do something like, you know, we had this...
Was that reference to 2009 for sure?
No. But, you know, on the other hand, if the person really is doing something that's blatantly not religiously where the other person's holding, then that is something that should be thought about, brought up, or, you know,
examined.
Sam,
needs some dating advice.
Saying this picture, as you said, can give off the impression like, oh, maybe there's something really wrong.
Yeah. But you gotta have this throughout life. People are gonna ask you about people, whether you're married or single or whatever, you're engaged. But I mean, you know, you always have to evaluate. If I don't feel like I know a person well, I say, you know what, I'm not really sure I'm in a position to speak to this person, maybe call a rabbi or a teacher. You know, if there's a real issue of concern, you know, you know that this girl is a X, Y, and Z. So sometimes you can go to a friend and say, you know what, I'm concerned about a certain issue. But sometimes the right answer is, you know what, I'm sure she's a great girl. I'm just not in a position to go ahead and give an answer.
And you don't really know. I mean, the reality is when you only know a girl the way she's bouncing off of the woman that you're dating, it's not necessarily who she really is. It could be that they just have a dynamic that is not at all informative of the kind of life she has. So you're much better off, like I was saying, just saying, with that, you have to be very careful about nuance. That, you know, you have to say it in a way, you just say, I really don't know. You know, in a way that doesn't, like, imply that there's
next question, how do you balance fun dates, you know, bowling, et cetera, and talking dates?
There should be a balance. I don't know if it should answer the question. Shouldn't only all be fun, but, you know, you boys are much more creative now than we were in our games. Like, I know there's board games, and you bring these games, and every time I ask, I'm not trying to be nosy. Sometimes I'll ask a guy, what did you do on the date? Not to be nosy, more to learn from you, because you're doing such creative things. That's important, because everyone likes to do these kinds of different types of activities, but at the same time, there should be some time for meaningful conversations and some kind of, just to see whether there's an emotional connection, not just if you could just have fun together. So.
I think you sort of have to evaluate yourself and relationship. Your relationship, when I dated, because I'm somewhat on the 10 side, every single date was the married marquee sitting there. What's the floor? 45th floor?
Yeah.
I should know by now.
Right.
And you're sitting there every single day, just serious and intense, and the relationship becomes very serious and intense. And a relationship like that could afford bowling, mini golf. If you're a person, all you're doing is having a good time on the date, and you realize that she doesn't see your serious side, so that's a good time to go to a restaurant, to a lounge, wherever it is, and make sure it's a serious conversation. So I don't think there's a one answer. You sort of have to evaluate what you sort of need in the relationship to bring out different sides of yourself, as opposed to sort of going in with, like, a sheet necessarily on those issues. But
Very good. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's interesting, interesting question over here. So girls' view of religion and the guys' view of religion may be somewhat different, maybe holding on different levels, etc. You know, obviously there's some different personalities and the different Buddha. How would you, how should you relate in that respect? How do you, what are the levels, etc. when it comes to religiosity, when it comes to dating versus guys versus girls, etc. I think that was the point of the question.
Something's probably lost translation to text. Only in the sense that it's a totally great question. It's not something you can sort of answer without knowing the situation. You have to find out what's the situation, what are the issues, how does it present itself, how to just sort of give an answer. You don't really sort of know exactly what you're dealing with. Again, it's a very common issue. We sort of deal with it in a more specific way than in a more general way.
Yeah, look, the bottom line is if it's plus minus 10, that's not good. It's plus, in other words, like if you look on a scale of 1 to 10, if it's extreme differences, it's probably not going to work out well. If it's just shades of gray, it's very likely that's going to be okay because of the nature of the fluidity of spiritual and religious development.
I'll get the clarification.
Well, yes, if I can answer one thing, because this is a major issue, sometimes you sort of have to get a sense of who the person is. You might have a girl that you're dating who you think is a serious girl, but maybe she has gone to movies with friends before. Maybe she, when she's home, she watches TV, and you don't watch TV, and you're trying to evaluate those types of issues. And I wouldn't just sort of look, does a person see a movie or not, but get a sense for the person. Is this a serious, growth-oriented person? And if she is, then maybe the movies won't be important to her necessarily down the road in life. So I wouldn't necessarily get hung up on a sort of specific manifestation of religious behavior, unless it's blatant. I will look at the overall totality of the person and see the context of that behavior within that totality of a person. I mean, if it's blatant, if it's something which is really problematic, that's one thing. But I wouldn't necessarily, get hung up on a detail. That detail might be something that can be resolved over a period of time, as opposed to be something that's defining the person. But again, it's very much a case-by-case situation.
Also, moving on, when it comes to money, what's considered financially secure? Let's say I have 3 years of control, let's say you're going to medical school, law school, etc. What is it considered to be inappropriate and irresponsible to start dating when you don't really have the ability to support yourself?
Next question. It's a great question. Dr. Bob, next question.
If you're ready in every other way, obviously you have to take into account the ability to support yourself. Now, norm has become much more than in previous generations for parents to help support. That's not always going to happen. The key to remember, though, is a predictor of happiness in a marriage and in life has very little to do with the amount of money. As long as your basic needs could be met, it doesn't have to predict anything in the short term, in the short term or in the long term. You know, the predictors of happiness are family, friends, and faith, not the amount of money. As long as you're not going to be living in poverty, and you know, so.
If I can just say this one thing, especially now that I have kids who are getting older, you don't want your kids, the parents, to feel as though they're the ATM of your life. No. The other couple of us has married children already. If you go to them and say, I'm dating somebody, we're going to get married, how much can you give for me a year? I mean, you sound like that's sort of the nature of the conversation. If the conversation is, you're the most important people in my life, you know, I want your support, let's have a conversation about this. There may be certain issues. I want you to meet the girl. I want you to be involved. I want you to be a major part. I trust your opinion. And you'll see that your parents are really with you. In other words, that they've been a part of the process. Their emotional support, their psychological support, and not just, can you write sort of me a check for X amount? Because you want to get them involved in the way that if you were a parent, that you'd want to be involved in this. And then often the finances come along with that as well, but not as though they're being brought in at the last second and all of a sudden write the check. That's a very, very important, just need those and keep it out of aim about how you deal with your parents and decisions.
The way you deal with money, this is important. We probably should talk about this more. Mm-hmm. The way you deal with money is highly predictive. What is it? Coso, piso, caso. But it's also, if you're very different, like if you're extremely careful with your money and she spends a lot of it, or, you know, she's not so careful, or if there's huge differences in the way you handle money, that is actually something to look at and think about.
is there's some interesting research that suggests
and that expectations of a certain type of lifestyle.
That's right. That
and you have a different expectation.
That's
that is
more important than the amount of money you have.
Right.
It's more that you can work together in terms of dealing with it, because that almost always plays out, and there's not enough discussion of short-term planning about after, you know.
Is that it?
Also, a question about, let's say when it comes to revealing information, et cetera, or also with the girl's safety itself, had to ensure, when it comes to revealing information, et cetera, or other aspects of ensuring that the girl stays safe, how do you ensure that that happens? Where does that fit in?
She's revealing information. Sorry, is it girls?
I think
safety is something different that I just wanted to bring up because I forgot it.
Did we hear the question?
The only thing I forgot to say, because I looked at my notes, was based on preparing for a date, I feel like it's irresponsible to go. You must ensure the girl's safety. I'm being serious. Sometimes we'll hear girls are dropped off by the trains, they're not given money to go back to where they're supposed to go. And then afterwards, the girl says, or the boy thought it was inappropriate to text her to call me to see whether I got home. Walk the girl to the door like we used to when my daughter was. Even if you have to see the father, that's right. But even if you don't, really, really, you don't want the achayas that you dropped somebody off and you didn't make sure that she got home, even if it's a terfa or it's more expensive for you to somehow make sure that she gets home. But please be cognizant of those kinds of things. I know the girls are more independent these days, but if God forbid something happens, we'll all know about it. And you don't want that achrayas on yourself. And again, it's part of mental kind and responsibility.
I'm just saying, I know it's not something done in our circles. To me, as a parent, it leaves a tremendous impression. If you pick a girl from her house,
right.
You go in, you say hello to the parents, you sit down for a second. Some of you hear about to get engaged sometime in the near future, Mr. Shem. You sit down with the father beforehand, you ask permission to marry your daughter, you let him know what your intentions are and how you're going to take care of her. I mean, those things would sound old-fashioned.
Just on the first day.
On the first day, yeah. Those things that sound chivalrous and old-fashioned and are meaningful and still should be done and should not be lost in the rush or the emotion or anything else going on.
All right, there's more questions. This could really go for a very long time. If it could be limited with regards to the shidduch system in of itself. So he asked about a comparison between the Jewish shidduch system and the secular system, and so as opposed to looking into how much of one work into people, how much research should one do, get some perspective on that. It could go for a long time, but any other perspective.
Just briefly, I mean, the system that YU has is unique, which is a lot of reliance on friends setting up friends. There's no evidence at all, though, that the modern system, people just meeting on their own without looking at anything, any background at all, works well in terms of predicting long-term marital success. Our system, the system that probably works best is what the casino does.
Right.
You know, where it's all done by the parents, and it's all based on common family values, common goals. But obviously that can't work with us because we have a much more complicated life because we have a foot on both sides of the fault line between the modern world and the traditional world. But the bottom line is that you just look at the divorce rate. Even though our divorce rate may be rising, we're still doing a heck of a lot better than the modern world is. And it's more, I think, partly because of the system we have. This stuff does work. It does make sense to look into background a little bit. But you have to be careful about what really matters and what some of the silly issues are that don't predict anything at all.
This goes back to a little bit as far as knowing yourself. If the guy calls up a shatkah and he asks 30 questions, I would say this is a person who needs a lot of hadrakha in life. If you really know yourself, you know what works for you, personality works for you, what you need in life, it doesn't have to be 30 questions. It's a couple things, a couple issues. I don't know if you have to sort of go through a laundry list of 85 things that are very insignificant. If you really want to sort of address who you are, be so as a person.
Yes.
Okay, another question. I'm getting some ice, so we'll try to finish soon. When it comes to people running your shidduchim, so who should you trust when it comes to Well, that's someone who knows you so well. So how should you trust him when it comes to accepting that shidduch? And additionally, let's say you don't really have time to look into a shidduch. You don't really have the time or resources to do it. What's your proper response? Should you say no, but maybe you want it eventually? You know. So how should one balance when doesn't necessarily have the time to do research, etc.?
A lot of
lungs.
Yeah.
A lot of lungs. I would say that depending on who's speaking, who's suggesting their idea, I would focus less on who's suggesting it, even though it's much more comfortable to take it from someone who knows you well, and maybe this is a Rebbe or someone who knows you really, really well. Maybe they know what's best for you. But at the same time, I would try to examine the person they're suggesting more than who's suggesting. I mean, sometimes a person who doesn't know you at all gives you the jackpot and sends you the right girl. Sometimes the person who knows you very well also does that. So I would take a little less emphasis on who's suggesting it, even though it's much more comfortable, but try to listen to what the person is saying and describing the person. Then you maybe want to go to someone who knows you better and say, you know, this one's suggesting this person for me. Do you think it's a good idea? Many people would say take the people who know you better and listen to their suggestions first, but I don't have such a loyalty to any one way, because you never know how you're going to meet the right person. I would just really try to focus on who they're suggesting as opposed to who's making the suggestion. If you don't have a lot of time to look into it, see, I wish that the boys would go out a little bit more and not be so medaic and think and need, like, you know, so many breaks between the girl they went out with on Monday, then they go into the recovery zone the next time. They should just, I think that they should go out a little bit more and be a little lighter about it. Like, don't go in it with such a heavy heart and making a commitment to life. If they went out a little bit more, even if they did a little less research, even if it means some bad dates, I still think that you'll come out more than if you just sit and clear and discuss and evaluate and analyze. And there's some young men that I talk to, and they're like, I'm still negotiating between five names. It's as if, like, they're doing a surgery. And it's not, like, this short. I would just try as much
more spontaneity, more fun, more bites.
And if it doesn't happen, if it's not the right one, say you met another person and you set it up with a friend, that's fine.
I want to thank all you guys in 2 hours. You guys are great. Thank you, Yitch.